Good morning. Today is Monday, June 20th, 2011. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott, and you are listening to KBOO FM. That's 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 100.7 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, that's KBOO.FM. A test. What do these states have in common? Alaska, Hawaii, Illinois, Iowa, Maine, Michigan, Minnesota, New Jersey, New Mexico, North Dakota, Rhode Island, Vermont, West Virginia, and Wisconsin. Yes, they all have governors, but there are also states that have fully abolished the death penalty. This morning, we'll speak with Ron Steiner of Oregonians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, and attorney Jeff Ellis of Oregon Capital Resource Center about the death penalty and the scheduled execution of Oregon prisoner Gary Haugen. The date for his execution is scheduled for August 16th. Both Ron and Jeff have been active in the fight to abolish the death penalty here in Oregon, and they have agreed to be a part of our program this morning to give us some more information and to clarify actions that we ought to engage in. So we want to remind you that this is a talk program, and we invite your calls. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. If you have a question or comment to direct to either Jeff or Ron, we invite you to call after a while and be a part of this morning conversation. Joining us in studio is attorney Jeff Ellis. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
And I think we have Ron on the phone. Is that correct?
That's correct. Good morning, Cecil, and thank you for inviting us to be on your show.
Well, thank you both for participating in this program. And perhaps I'll begin with you, Ron. Could you just tell us something about who are the people of Oregonians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty?
Certainly. Oregonians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, and we'll refer to it as OADP because it's a sort of a long name, is a volunteer organization. It's made up of people who are interested in having a more peaceful Oregon, and we think the death penalty is a violent act that we don't need. We have alternatives to it. We are made up of a host of people throughout the state, people from faith communities, people who belong to secular organizations like the League of Women Voters and ACLU and Oregon Peace Works, people like that. We have a board of directors that's made up of people who have been involved in the criminal justice system for quite a few years. We have quite a bit of experience, and we also have an advisory council that's, I think, about 70 people right now that is active in our work as well. And they have quite a varied background that's helpful to us in giving us direction on things that we should be doing.
Thank you. And Jeff, I understand you have been active on issues around the death penalty for a number of years. Is that correct?
That's correct. I've been an attorney for 25 years and been working on death penalty cases for at least the last 15, both in terms of representing individuals who are either facing a death sentence or under a death sentence in a variety of states and also in the federal system. And in addition, I've been involved in the abolition movement both here in Oregon, where I now work, and previously in Washington state, just above us.
Great. You know, I really appreciate the work that people such as OADP and the work that attorneys such as you, Jeff, do. And for many of us, the death penalty is maybe in the back of our heads until something comes up. And so recently, here in Oregon, we learned that the scheduled execution of Gary Haugen is scheduled for August. And OADP and you have been active in this struggle. Ron, could you give us a little background about how we got to this point with the scheduled execution of Mr. Haugen?
Well, Oregon has a rather complex set of laws that govern the death penalty. And there are several appeals which each person that's convicted can go through. And Mr. Haugen has decided that he doesn't want to keep going on his appeals and has given all those up. Therefore, he was granted a hearing in front of a circuit court judge in Marion County, and the judge issued a death warrant stating that August 16th would be the time that he would be executed. It is within Mr. Haugen's rights to do that. As people who are interested in stopping the death penalty and interested in nonviolence, even though that is his personal wish, we would still suggest that it's not an appropriate action, and there are alternatives that we would seek. So we're trying to halt the execution.
And to halt the execution, I think I understand there are various actions being planned. We should talk to Jeff, who filed a petition with the Supreme Court. What was that about?
Well, it's what's called a petition for writ of mandamus, which is sort of a fancy way of saying what we're doing is asking the Oregon Supreme Court to make the Marion County Court, the court that issued the death warrant, make them follow the law. And I think it's important to understand what happened in Mr. Haugen's case, because while I completely agree with Ron that an individual who is fully capable and who is mentally competent can waive rights, the evidence in this case was that Mr. Haugen is mentally ill and is delusional. The only psychologist who evaluated him prior to the death warrant hearing concluded that he suffered from some severe delusional beliefs and as a result was incompetent to be executed. Now, at the hearing, what happened was his lawyers attempted to present that information, but the judge stopped the lawyers from doing that, asked Mr. Haugen if he wanted to fire his lawyers, again, without determining whether Mr. Haugen was competent, allowed him to do that, and then said, we're going to ignore the evidence that you're incompetent, Mr. Haugen. Is that okay? Haugen, of course, said yes, and then the judge sentenced him to die. And our complaint is that the law wasn't followed, plain and simple. When there's a question of competency, that has to be resolved with the lawyers still acting as the lawyers. What we have here is a situation where the law completely was not followed. Unfortunately, that's sum and substance of what happens in the death penalty cases, is oftentimes the law is pushed aside, shoved into the garbage can so that the result wanted can be reached. And so what we're doing is we're asking the Oregon Supreme Court to step in and say, hey, Marion County, follow the law, do that hearing, and make a determination whether Mr. Haugen is competent or incompetent.
And I understand the Oregon Attorney General has ask that your petition be dismissed because you don't have standing?
That's exactly right. The Oregon Attorney General has captured a great catch-22 because they say, well, even if Mr. Haugen is incompetent and can't make decisions about what to do and what not to do, nobody other than him can make those decisions. So we've got a perfect storm, I guess. So we're filing a response today in the Oregon Supreme Court arguing that if the law wasn't followed, there has to be some way the Oregon Supreme Court can step in and say, follow the law. That shouldn't be such a radical proposition.
It shouldn't, but it may be. And I understand, Mr. Steiner, that you are calling an OADP. You all are calling for actions for citizens to actions for people to do. And what are some of those actions that you're recommending?
There's a couple other ways that this could be stopped. Mr. Haugen can change his mind, and it's my understanding. I'm not intimately familiar with his past, but I understand he's changed his mind before. If he changes his mind and says he'll go ahead with appeals, then the execution would be called off. The other element is that the governor, Governor Kitzhafer, has it within his power to do a couple of different things that would stop the execution. He can grant clemency and change the death sentence. And Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong on any of these. Jeff knows more about the legal aspects. Change that sentence to life without parole. He can have a reprieve, which would hold off the execution at that time, or he could declare a moratorium. And there are examples of governors doing that. The most widely known one is in Illinois, where Governor Ryan declared a moratorium, and that held up for 10 years until their legislature just recently in March repealed the death penalty. So there are some things to do. So we are calling upon our our supporters and citizens, even if they're not involved with us, to think about this process, to learn a little bit about it and all the flaws with the death penalty, and beseech the governor to use one of his alternatives to stop this execution.
Now, I understand Oregon has had a, for lack of a better term, love-hate relationship with the death penalty. Sometimes we've had it, sometimes we haven't, and I think since 64 has it been in Oregon, the death penalty, or 84?
84. The Supreme Court abolished the death penalty nationally, I think it was in 1972, and then they changed their mind and brought it back in 1976, and at the time Oregon didn't have a death penalty, and then there was a vote of the people to bring it back in 84. Oregon is unique, like only three states, Florida, California, and Oregon, where the death penalty is part of the Constitution. Therefore, to change the law, it requires a vote of the people. So that's why it's very important in our efforts to educate people, get people to think about it, discuss it, learn, read about it. Because eventually the people are going to have the opportunity to make the decision whether we want to keep the system or get rid of the system.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. We're speaking this morning about the death penalty. Our guests this morning are Ron Steiner of, I'm going to say the whole name, Oregonian for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, or OADP, and Attorney Jeff Ellis of Oregon Capital Resource Center. We invite your calls and questions and comments. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Now, I understand that in terms of the death penalty, Oregon in recent years has had two executions, I think in the 90s, and was not Mr. Kitzhaber governor at that time?
He was in 1996 and 1997. Incidentally, both of those people were volunteers, like Mr. Haugen, gave up their appeals and were executed. And it's our understanding, and the governor has made this statement publicly, that he anguished over that. He went ahead and allowed them to happen, but I don't think he was happy with that responsibility. I don't know how anybody could be happy with the responsibility to take another person's life, even though it's part of the law at this point. And that's one of the big reasons we want to change the law.
Right. Again, we're speaking about the death penalty. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Do you think the death penalty should remain on the books, or should we eliminate it? Give us a call and join in this morning conversation. Let's go to Dave. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm well.
So, I have a question for you. You don't believe in the death penalty?
Correct.
If someone wants to be put to death on their own, why are you opposing it?
There's several reasons. Number one, it's more violence.
Actually, it's not violence. Violence is once
David, let him respond, and then you have a chance to respond. Thank you. Okay, continue, Mrs. Steiner.
Yeah, Dave, I'm sure that you have your opinion on that. If you want my answer for it, we think that another killing as punishment for killing doesn't make much sense. It is more violence. We think there are alternatives that are more appropriate. We don't think that in terms of our social justice system, that this system is accurate enough to continue on, even though he has asked for this. We continue to think that it's not a good idea, and we will try and stop it.
And Dave, your response? He's left. Okay. Attorney Jeff, I'm sure that isn't a new issue that you heard in terms of, well, why don't you just let people die?
Well, there's a couple of responses to that. We do have a Death with Dignity Act here in Oregon. I suppose if Mr. Haugen felt that it applied to him, he could ask to be given some drugs to take his own life. But at least the way I read the Death with Dignity Act, it doesn't say you can kill yourself if you're if you don't like living in prison anymore or you're unhappy with the current state of your life. You have to have a terminal illness, and that clearly doesn't apply here. Secondly, this is not Mr. Haugen's choice. Mr. Haugen is being executed in our names, by our act, by our government. And he doesn't have a right to plead guilty and say, give the death penalty to me. In other words, at his trial, he couldn't say, I don't want a jury trial, I just want the death penalty. Nobody can do that. You couldn't do that if you were charged with a murder. You couldn't do it if you were charged with a robbery. Nobody has the right to say, give the death penalty me. It is an act by the people, by the government, in our names. And so he doesn't have the choice now, just as he didn't have it then. More importantly, an incompetent person, a person who suffers from severe delusions as a result of mental illness, can't make that choice. And I think it's very important that we keep that in mind. This is not a free choice by a healthy man. This is a choice that is not really a choice because it's a man who's mentally ill who is making this request at the service of his delusions.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. The morning's conversation is about the death penalty. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And let's go to Sandy. Good morning, Sandy.
Hello.
Yes.
How are you?
Yes.
I've got a couple of points. One being that if your guest was being accurate about what that judge did in the courtroom, that judge should be, at the very least, taken out of his position, and I'm really tired of the injustices done by our justices, you know, and that should be a bumper sticker. But the other is that what's to stop people that are depressed or just sociopathic from just taking out who they want in a death penalty state and then requesting, you know, they're just not fighting the death penalty. They want it because otherwise they would have committed suicide. They just can't bring themselves to do it. So the state is actually helping them, and they're not being punished in actuality for their acts. Some people think it's a reward to get to kill and then to die. You know, they couldn't care less about living so long as they get to, do what they want to other people. So if this guy were competent, and even if he's not, he's still not being effectively punished for what he did to the point where he's learning any lesson. He just doesn't want to live because it's miserable there in prison or something. And I don't want to be sadistic. I think our prisons are very, very badly set up. I think that they shouldn't have comforts, that they should have only constructive things to do, like exercise, fresh air, and studying, and then doing work, but not televisions and workout rooms where they could become these macho, violent idiots even more so in the institutions that they're housed in. But I think a prison should be more humane on the basic level of where they're not treated as subhuman, because that also perpetuates the problem in our guards, the prison guards. They have become sociopathic in their treatment of human beings themselves. That whole system needs to be revamped and make prison into what it should be, a punishment, a constructive punishment. Get rid of the death penalty because that's appealing to the lower brain in the individuals that are supposed to be in the justice system, such as this judge. And, Don't honor the guy's request to commit suicide after he performed violent acts.
Mm-hmm.
It would just be rewarding murderers, basically, who want an out and can't bring themselves to kill themselves. And
thank you.
You know, and as far as people's rights to commit suicide, this is not the same. But and this guy with his mental issues, that judge, to take away the man's ability to speak up for himself and to get assessed further, that judge, in my opinion, is somebody abusing a mentally disturbed person. And so that'd be the same as kicking a child, as far as I'm concerned. That judge himself should be tried.
Thank you, Sandy.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Steiner, your organization is named Alternatives to the Death Penalty. And certainly, I'm sure you have heard over the years people who might accuse you of being soft on crime What are alternatives to the death penalty, and why is that preferred?
Cecil, if you can, I'll answer that question, but the inference was that we sometimes referred to things that we are not. The alternatives to the death penalty are life without parole, which is on the books in Oregon, life sentence, which really means 30 years, and then they review their case, and some people can get out after that. Hopefully rehabilitation is taken care of or taken place, and they are not a threat to the society. But our organization is not soft on crime. We believe in the justice system. We hope that the justice system is fair. Unfortunately, the justice system, which is run by humans, makes mistakes. Evidence the fact there have been 138 people from death rows who have been found to be innocent of their crimes, and after many, many years of incarceration have been let go. So the mistakes aspect is also something that's there. We think one of the things that happens in the death penalty system, it is highly politicized, and the focus becomes, as it is now, the focus is on the perpetrator, the convicted person, and the prosecution. And left out is the important community of murder victim family members. Loved ones of murder victims are left many times in the shadows. They are abused by the fact that the system of having to go back to court year after year after year, appeal after appeal after year, reopening those wounds. And a lot of people who favor the death penalty say we have to provide closure to those family members. Well, we know a lot of family members. I happen to be a member of the board of directors of the national organization, Murder Victims Families for Reconciliation. And these are people who have had that terrible tragedy happen in their family, and they are against the death penalty. And they will tell you, we never want to forget our loved one. Another killing does not honor our loved one. It certainly doesn't bring our loved one back. And to continue the violence only spreads it even more. So there's no sense. We have no feelings of being soft on crime. People who commit violent crimes should be separated from the rest of us. People should be punished. We just stop at the death penalty. We think that is more violence that is not necessary.
And Attorney Jeff, you've been involved and also been involved in this movement nationally, and I would like for you to speak of the move to abolish the death penalty in several states most recently. Is that a positive step, or are things occurring in other states that need to happen here?
Things are happening in other states that hopefully will happen here sometime in the near future. I think what has happened over the last decade is people who support the death penalty in principle recognize that it doesn't serve the community interest. You know, the death penalty is purported to be this public safety initiative that keeps us safer. But what we're finding is that we're spending millions and millions of dollars, and that we could spend that money other ways. We could spend that money on victim services, as Ron suggested. Victims of violent crime are in need of services. I hear their voices in every legislature that I've gone to saying, give us some money. We're happy to take the money from the death penalty and give it to them. We can spend the money on things like drug and alcohol treatment and mental health treatment. That is what police officers say is going to reduce crime, not the death penalty. You know, there's a recent poll of police chiefs around the country, and they asked, what do you think is the most effective way to reduce violent crime? And guess what came in last? The death penalty. And so what we're seeing is we're spending a huge amount of money on the thing that is least effective.
You are listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Our guests are Ron Steiner of OADP and Jeff Ellis of the Oregon Capital Resource Center. Give us a call and share your thoughts. Let's go to our next caller, Joanne. Good morning.
Yes, hello. Good program and very uncomfortable, but we need to be made uncomfortable in this country about a lot of things. Anyway, this program brings up a memory of my life. In the 1960s, I got out of the military, went to San Francisco to live, didn't know anybody there. I guess I was lonely and afraid. And I joined this group called Suicide Anonymous, I guess to make some kind of community. It's not funny, really. And this Golden Gate Bridge there had a reputation for people using it to end their lives, and I guess the reputation of the bridge is still there. But I want to say this. I personally believe that a person has a right to take their life, and nobody, and it's none of anybody's business. And also I want to say, the jail system and the legal system are inhuman and cruel and need to be changed, and money's not going to do it. Thanks.
Thank you, Joanne. Jeff?
Well, here's my response to that. You know, if I was walking on the Golden Gate Bridge and I saw somebody about to jump, I would try to stop that person. And I think most of us would, because even though that person may be in immense pain, there's a community out there, and it can get better. And really, in a lot of ways, that is what OADP is attempting to do. They're attempting to stop more violence. If they see someone who's about to jump off a bridge, they're saying, let's stop that. It can get better. We can live without the death penalty.
Let's go to our next caller. Michael, good morning.
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, the death penalty historically has only been applied to poor people. So the death penalty is basically a tool used for racism, classism. Mostly only poor people get it. Mostly only males die in the capital punishment. Hardly ever any females do it. And if you look at how it's been applied nationally, mostly black males have been the victims of death penalty. So what I want to say is, you know, the rationale behind the death penalty is that it was supposed to deter crime. But right now, Oregon is in the midst of one of the most violent things of homicides. I mean, every time you look on the news, I mean, people getting killed left and right out there. So clearly, the death penalty do not deter crime. So we have to look at why is it even on the books. Only because rich politicians use it as a tool to get elected, to establish fear. You know, the same old thing they use all the time. So all I'm saying is death penalty should definitely be abolished because, like I said before, only poor people and males are getting victimized by the death penalty.
Hey, thank you, Michael. Ron or Jeff, you want to comment about how the death penalty is unequally applied?
Sure, I'd be happy to speak to that, and Ron may as well. Well, I've been an attorney for 25 years and represented people facing or under a death sentence here in Oregon, in Washington State, in Texas, and in the federal courts. And I've still not seen a rich person yet face the possibility of the death penalty. The death penalty is used in racist ways. Both if you're in racial minority, you're more likely to face the death sentence, and if you're a racial minority who killed a white person, very much so, you're more likely to face a death sentence. The death penalty is also captures individuals who are mentally ill because, unfortunately, mental illness is still misunderstood in our society, and oftentimes individuals see that as frightening and see it as something that is a person who is mentally ill is a person who is a danger. And so what we see on death rows, and it's true here in Oregon and it's true in every state that continues this experiment with the death penalty, is not the worst of the worst, but the poorest of the poor, and those who are easiest to demonize because they don't look like the people who sit on their juries.
Yeah, and I'll back that up a little bit as well with some facts that the FBI publishes, and they come out with a murder rate, and the states that do not have a death penalty in the last publication that they have, their rate for 100,000 adults on an annual basis was 2.93. The states with death penalties is 5.22 per 100,000. So it's a much higher level. So the gentleman who pointed out that is non-deterrent is quite accurate according to those figures. The survey that Jeff cited before, the Smart on Crime survey with the police chiefs, they will bear that out. And the other thing is the point that Jeff has made and a couple of other people have made. The death penalty is just one thread in the fabric of our culture. And unfortunately, it's not a very strong thread. It hurts the fabric. It cost a lot of money, and if we were redistributing those funds to things that really did deter crime, like more police, more better forensic, better investigations, rehab programs. I'll give you an example in Oregon. We have over 14,000 prisoners in Oregon. It's been stated in several news articles that as much as a third, and I saw one in the article yesterday about the health in the prisons, an even higher estimate, but at least a third have some kind of mental illness, retardation, mental problems. The other thing is a good number of those people have addictions. There are addiction programs that work. We have one in Oregon, was written up in a newspaper article not too long ago, that has an 88% success ratio based on the fact that people who go through the program do not reoffend and go back to prison. 88%. It works. The problem is there's only room in at that time for 271 individuals in that program out of 14,000. And so programs do work, but the funding is not there to expand them. If we can help people with those kinds of problems to help stabilize people who have mental illnesses, the crime rate would go down dramatically in this state. And the $20+ million that we spend every year could be redistributed to other things that really do work.
Thank you. You're listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott. We're speaking this morning with Ron Steiner and Jeff Ellis about the death penalty. On August 16th, Oregon prisoner Gary Haugen is scheduled to be executed. We're speaking this morning about the death penalty in general and also his upcoming date of execution. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we'll go to Herschel. Good morning, Herschel.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm also opposed to death penalty and kind of second everything that Michael just got through saying. Another reason not to have the death penalty is it involves a circle of people in the state killing. I mean, the people that serve the last meal, the people that put in the meal or put in the needles, the people that are witnesses. I mean, there's a huge circle of people who are kind of hardened to this kind of violent act of killing another individual. And, I mean, gosh, these are people you really wouldn't want to have for neighbors after they've been involved in a violent crime like this. So another reason against the death penalty is that it kind of hardens society against killing.
Thank you. And we have another caller online, Annalisa. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, you're on the air.
Thank you. I am not aware of the circumstances of Mr. Haugen. Apparently, he killed somebody in prison. And if I have read a little bit about it, the violence in prisons is so extreme. So I'd like to know the circumstances. And then recently, a person in another state, apparently a very rich person, who drove apparently $120,000 vehicle and killed two people, and got himself free, and apparently he had done it before, and therefore, like the other caller said, classism, and apparently if you have enough money, you can buy yourself out. And I like your comments on that. Thank you very much for the program, and of course, the death penalty is obscene. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, let me respond to the first point. It's true that Mr. Haugen was sentenced to death for a prison killing. But we can make Oregon prisons safe, and prisons around the United States are becoming increasingly safe. Now, there's certainly some cost to that, because one of the things that happens is there's greater deprivation of individual rights within prisons. We put the people who are most dangerous really in isolation. Mm-hmm. But we know a lot more about how to keep prisons safe. The most dangerous individuals in the United States are at a prison called ADX Florence, and it's in Colorado in the middle of the desert. I've been there a couple of times. And it houses the most dangerous federal prisoners, and they've never had a prison killing there. And the reason they don't have any prison killings there, and frankly, almost no violence, is because the entire prison is designed to prevent that kind of violence. So this idea that, well, we need to have the death penalty on the books because what about prison killings? Because we need to make sure that we tell people if you're in on a murder and you do another murder, well, then you're going to die. And I think really what we're doing is we're spending tens of millions of dollars to send that philosophical or symbolic message, and we're not actually making the prison safer. I think the legacy of Mr. Haugen's case should not be how much money we spent to kill a mentally ill and delusional man, but instead, how can we make prisons safer? Let's stop the flow of the money to the death penalty and say and use our money to make prisons safer. That would be a much more positive legacy than continuing this pattern of violence.
Thank you.
Another point, if I can make, on the fact that there are violent acts and murders in prison, they do happen. We abhor the fact that they do happen, but as Jeff said, they can be made more safe. It ties also into what the gentleman said earlier, that only poor people get the death penalty, and for the most part, it's racially biased. The fact of the matter, in this country, less than 2% of people who get convicted of capital murder get a death penalty, and they are, in fact, all poor. But what that means is 98% of the people that are in prison who have murdered somebody are in general population, and the numbers of murders inside the prisons are very, very minimal compared to the population. If those people who are living on the outside and they're involved in gangs or they're involved in drugs or involved in crime, there's probably a better chance that they would get murdered on the outside as opposed to on the inside. So people have this, when they hear about one murder in prison, they think that everybody gets murdered. But there's lots of people who are convicted of murder who live through their sentence and sometimes live the rest of their lives there that do not perform other violent acts. So that's another consideration, I think.
Thank you, Ron. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. This is More Talk Radio. Let's speak with Eileen.
Hello?
Yes, Eileen.
Yes, I have a question. They have said, the panel, that Gary Haugen is mentally ill, and I'd like to know what evidence they have that he is mentally ill, because many people in Oregon don't believe that the mentally ill are ever put on death row.
Thank you.
Well, the evidence comes straight from a neuropsychologist, a nationally renowned neuropsychologist named Muriel Lezak, who evaluated Mr. Haugen right before the death warrant hearing. And she conducted a fairly extensive evaluation that took the better part of a day, examined a number of documents. And as a result, she came to the conclusion that Mr. Haugen is mentally ill and suffers from some delusional beliefs, some severe delusional beliefs that lead him to make the request to be executed. There are plenty of mentally ill people on Oregon's death row. And in fact, one of the things that doesn't exist here in Oregon is any sort of prevention that tells jurors, if you find that this person is mentally ill or severely mentally ill, you shouldn't sentence him to death. And so what tends to happen, because that instruction doesn't exist, is, as the caller suggests, oftentimes there's a belief that either people aren't mentally ill who are prosecuted for the death penalty, and therefore they believe that this person isn't mentally ill, or because in Oregon we ask the question of jurors, do you think this guy will present a future danger? And oftentimes we associate mental illness with dangerousness, which is not necessarily the case, but there's still that sort of belief in the culture that that's the way. And so you run a real danger in Oregon if you present evidence to a jury in a death penalty case that says he's mentally ill and therefore he's less culpable. Jurors can turn around and say, yeah, but he scares me and he's more dangerous, and therefore, even though he's mentally ill, I think that's a reason to vote for death. And we need to, you know, we need to stop the death penalty, and we need to make sure in the interim that we look closely at those individuals who are under death sentences to determine whether they're mentally ill or not.
Speaking of stopping the death penalty, let's speak for a few minutes how we might eliminate the death penalty here in Oregon. Some of us were inspired by actions in some states, most recently in Illinois, where they abolished the death penalty. I understand, unlike Illinois, to abolish the death penalty here in Oregon requires something other than the vote of the legislature. Mr. Steiner, could you talk about the road to abolish the death penalty here in Oregon?
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, Oregon, along with California and Florida, require a vote of the people. The first step has to be to get on the ballot. There are two ways to do that. You have an initiative where you gather signatures in the quantity required, asking it to be put on the ballot. Or you can do it through a legislative referral where the legislature would pass a bill that says that we're going to put this on a ballot. It has to be on a general election ballot, so the even-numbered years, 2012 would be the first opportunity, 2014 would be the next opportunity. Because the vote was so high in the last general election, that moved up the number of signatures. So going for signatures is a very, very difficult, very expensive thing to do. So probably through the legislature, getting a referral would be the more appropriate move in Oregon. And that has to happen first, and then it gets on to the ballot. The other thing that really has to happen so that people are knowledgeable about the death penalty is a whole lot of education. I've been here several years, and I can't tell you how many people have said when we talk about this issue, oh, I didn't know we had a death penalty here, or they don't know, understand the circumstances that have been talked about in conversations like this program. So there's a big education effort that has to be made so that people can make a knowledgeable vote. And then when we have an up and down vote on it, then the decision will be made for, at least for the near future.
And it's my understanding, as we look about having conversations with other Oregonians, that it's important to certainly make that connection with the other person and share one's thoughts. Looking at other states, we see, I think it's evident, that it's not a so-called liberal-conservative split, that people of goodwill of all political perspective can oppose the death penalty. Jeff, could you tell us from your look at what's happening nationally, how this movement has taken place and gathering support?
Yeah, I think historically there was this sort of left-right split, and I think that's broken down. And it's broken down because people from the right who believe in the death penalty, believe it is the moral and right thing to do, have started to say, but you know what? In practice, it's not working. And so there are a number of people who've joined our voices, and the voice, you know, my voice is, I don't believe in it. That's the position that I come from. But there are people, you know, that we now walk arm in arm with who say, I believe in it theoretically, but practically, it is not working. And it's not working because we're spending this tremendous amount of money and getting no results. How much money have we spent since 1984 on the death penalty here in Oregon? And what has it produced? It beat down two men previously in the late 90s who volunteered, and maybe that's happening again. But if you exclude those volunteers, those people who gave up along the way, we haven't executed a single person. We have 37 people on death row right now, including a woman. And so far, since 1984, we've not executed anybody against their will. How many millions and millions of dollars have we spent to get a sum zero? And then let's reverse that question. How could we spend that money? What could we have done with that money? What could we have built that was positive if we had spent the money in different ways? And so that's where other people are joining and saying, you're right. It's broken. It's not going to be fixed. It's horribly expensive. And we can do better. We can spend our money in better ways, in ways that really will bring our community together instead of tearing it apart.
And Ron, certainly your organization has been active on this front here in Oregon for many years, and as a volunteer-run organization, you encounter many difficulties, just I imagine, just in terms of getting enough people involved. What are ways in which people might become involved with your organization? And give us a contact information also.
Yes, certainly. We are an organization that's trying to build the coalition for several reasons, so that other people see that it is a movement of substance, and also so that the legislature knows that there is political backing for them when they take this position to put it on the ballot. For a long time, in the last couple of years, we've been doing things that trying to get people to sign up, having public meetings where we have dialogue, and we're doing that. But so many times they said, well, what can I do? What can I do? Well, we have something to do now. We are asking people to contact the governor and ask him to exercise the things that are within his power and stop this execution. If people would like to join with this effort, again, we are OADP. We have a website, www.oadp.org, and there's information there. You can look at our supporters, individuals, and organizations. If the legal maneuvers do not stop this, there'll be an occasion where we will probably have a vigil, or maybe more than one vigil, to demonstrate against the death penalty. As we get closer, we will be asking people to contact our legislators, tell them how they feel about it, let the legislators know that people out here do not think this is a wise system to continue, that we can use, as Jeff said, the money in so many more worthwhile ways. We have a telephone number, which is 503-990-7060. That people can get in touch and maybe offer to do some things like setting up a public meeting in their library or their school or their church or their club or their book club, things of that nature. So there's lots of things that people can do, and this is an unfortunate circumstance that we do it in the face of a impending death of a human being, but this does